Hey, everybody. This is a preview of a premium episode of Blocked and Reported. You're about to hear a little bit of a story of British's strictest headmistresses. This really interesting figure who got in a bit of a spat involving, yes, you know this already, Tina Turner. So it's quite a story. You're going to hear a preview of it. What else will people miss if they only hear the preview, Katie?
We've also got an update from Canada about the alleged mass graves at the residential schools up there.
Yes. And if you don't want to miss all this content, very simple solution. Go to blockedreporter.org, where for just $5 a month and up, you can sign up to become a premium subscriber, aka a primo, aka a preemie, except I don't really think we're going to go with that. But yeah, you should consider doing that. Either way, enjoy the preview. Katie, I hate Canada. It's a dark, cold, miserable place. Can we go to a sunnier, happier place like, say, England?
Yes, let's do it. All right, so now on to Britain's strictest headmistress. All right, so Jesse, our story today, yes, takes place in the UK, and it begins with the death of Tina Turner, although it has very little to do with Tina Turner herself. So as tributes poured in for the late singer, one of those was posted by a British woman named Catherine Burblesing. Are you familiar?
No, we partially share a last name, and yet I haven't heard of her.
It's the Indian side of you. You share that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So as you will hear, her particular tribute led to quite a bit of drama. But before we get to that, Catherine Burblesing is the founder and headmistress of the Michaela School, as she's commonly known as Britain's strictest headmistress. And she has a distinctively conservative approach to education. And despite having a name that sounds like Mary Poppins' whiter alter ego, she's actually half Jamaican, half Guyanese Indian, which is to say she's Black. And this will be important later. So Burblesing, she has a background in teaching in state schools. So that's what we would call public schools here, particularly underperforming state schools. And she first rose to prominence in October 2010. At the time, she was a newly appointed deputy head teacher, so basically a vice principal, at what The Guardian called the failing St. Michael and All Angels Academy School in Camberwell, South London. Now,
Camberwell.
Now, the UK education system is very confusing to American ears. So, for instance, what they call public schools are what we would call private schools.
Lorries.
Is that it? Wait, is a lorry a toilet or a pram?
A truck is a lorry. A public school there is called a lift.
So what they would call public schools, we would call private schools. And what they call academies, which we would likely think of as private schools because academy sounds very fancy, very expensive, they're actually public in the sense that they receive government funding and they don't charge fees. Although they can also have ties to churches, which makes it a little more confusing. So St. Michael and All Angels Academy School was sort of what we would think of as like an underserved public school. And in October 2010, Burblesing gave a speech at this conference in Birmingham that would put her in the headlines. And the speech was about what she saw as a broken school and a broken education system. So The Guardian reported, quote, she told representatives that parents had no idea life in most schools was, quote, totally and utterly chaotic. She was particularly critical of what she saw as a lack of discipline in Black boys and said the system was, quote, broken and that it, quote, kept poor children poor.
Okay, so she's just like a critic of this system.
A critic, but also, I mean, she's a teacher or a vice principal.
Yeah, but she's like, she's not shy about her expressing her views about what doesn't work.
Exactly. She also kept a pseudonymous blog under the name Miss Snuffy, which is also her Twitter handle.
Miss Snuffy.
Yeah. And she described the school on her blog as the Alcatraz of the world of education. And she wrote about problems at the school, which, according to her, was plagued by violence, teen pregnancy, parents who didn't give a shit, etc. And she wrote that teachers were silenced from discussing these problems because the academy was scared of losing students if the truth was known. By the way, she had only been at the school for a couple weeks. So at the conference, she received a standing ovation. But back at work, this didn't go over quite as well. The school's governors, which are either elected or appointed volunteer positions that oversee the school, they were pissed. They said she insulted her colleagues and, according to the Sunday Times, quote, attacked her for using photographs of pupils whom she named in her speech, which, yeah.
Wait.
Bad move.
HIPAA violation for one thing. Wait, so she was literally like, my school sucks. Look at Jenny here. She's a dumb pregnant bitch.
Huge bitch.
Here's a photo of her. Look how pregnant she
Jenny's
is.
Jenny's mom is a cow.
Here's a photo of Jenny's mom. She's a bitch too.
Yeah.
I can see how this might not be good standard practice.
So I only saw that detail in the Sunday Times. I generally think they're a pretty legit outlet. It's possible they got the detail wrong, but they reported that. So she was placed on leave after this, and then she resigned after she'd just been there for 3 weeks. She said she was asked to comply with conditions she didn't want to comply with. And is,
you can come back, but you're not allowed to call Jenny a bitch. She's I can't do that. A bitch.
And as news of the allegations spread, the school, in fact, did lose students. So as The Guardian reported in February the next year, so 2011, quote, "The school is due to close after just 16 parents named it as their first choice in the latest admissions round, a collapse of confidence which the school claims was exacerbated by Birbal Singh."
Okay, so she's seen as as this really annoying presence who harmed the school before she left.
For sure. And she has a long history of being very outspoken on education issues and free speech. Since then, she had a stint as the UK social mobility chair from 2021 to 2023. And she quit earlier this year because she said she felt unable to properly speak her mind, but not before stirring more controversy in that position by asserting, for example, that girls like hard math or maths, for our UK listeners, less than boys. And that accounts for some gender differences in fields like physics.
Can't say that.
Can't say that. It's a James Damore treatment. More recently, she made news after writing an editorial for The Telegraph about trans-identifying kids in schools. This one wasn't particularly inflammatory. She basically said that the government needs to come up with some kind of universal guidance on this issue. So it's not up to individual schools and staff to figure out what the hell to do about trans kids themselves, which I think that makes sense.
Yeah, it seems mild. I could also see people responding negatively to it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I can also see these things are regional. There are some local differences in how, you know, a school district in deep red Texas is going to feel about pronoun changes versus a school in Oregon. So maybe it should be left up to the individual school districts. Anyway, you're getting the picture, right? She's blunt and she's also been a lightning rod for controversy. So she's not an overtly Tory partisan. She considers herself a floating voter. But her approach has put her unambiguously at odds with progressives. So I'm going to play you a clip of her speaking at the National Conservative Conference, or NatCon, earlier this year. I think this gives you a good sense of her. And also, some of what she says here is going to come back later. And just for context, she's going to reference detention in this clip. And that's because she opened her speech saying, "I'm afraid you're all in for a telling off for me today," followed by detention. She was speaking to a conservative audience here.
"So why do I need to throw all of you into detention? Because you haven't been paying enough attention to the fact that our nation's culture is not only created in our schools, but that it is our children who are leading the development of that culture in our schools. Adult authority is long gone. So here I am, ringing the alarm. In 20 years, many of us will be retired or sadly dead. And the children in our schools will be in important and influential positions in our institutions. As G.K. Chesterton said, the true soldier fights not because he hates what is in front of him, but because he loves what is behind him. Well, I'm asking, how much do you love your country? How much do you love the values that you claim to defend? Do you love them enough to tweet under your own name? Do you love them enough to change your child's school to one that's less woke and ignore the impact on your social status? Do you love them enough to do more than simply chat to your friends who already agree with you at dinner parties? For heaven's sake, man, stand up and be counted. As Russell Crowe says in the film Gladiator, a clip I regularly play for my staff, hold the line, stay with me. What we do in life echoes in eternity. Will your life echo hollow with cowardly hypocrisy, or will it echo with courage, valiance, and honor? The choice is yours. Strength and honor be with you all. Now get yourselves to detention."
So yeah, she's a fiery speaker, and it sounds like the crowd lapped it up.
Yeah, conservative crowd, they love this shit.
So what does she do? I take it she can't make a living just going around giving fiery speeches about putting adults in detention.
You don't think you can make a living doing that? There's an OnlyFans channel for that.
I think Backpage is shut down, right?
Yeah. Okay, so she's currently the head of the Michaela School, and that's the school she founded in 2014. It's a British free school, which is like the equivalent of a U.S. charter school. So it's a state-funded nonprofit run by an independent entity, and it's famous for its unapologetically strict approach. It's Britain's strictest school. That's what they call it. And it's been very successful. It received top marks from like various offices in the UK. It has some of the highest attainment for any non-selective British school. And most notably, it has the highest value-added measures, which means its students achieved more relative to their primary school results than any other school in Britain. So they're going into this school at one level and they're leaving it achieving more. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how this sort of thing is measured, but it sounds like the experts who came up with these metrics think this is a very, very good school.
They think it's a very successful school.
Successful.
But yes. As I said, it's strict as hell.
How so?
Okay, picture a Waldorf school. Now burn it down. That's Michaela School. It's the exact opposite of like a creative, feeling-centered, child-first education system. They have what they call a no-excuses policy, so even minor infractions are strictly punished. So for instance, you forget to bring a pencil to class, that's a demerit. Same for slouching or looking out the window or grimacing at teachers or talking in the hallways. So things that are not even against the rules at most schools. At the Michaela School, you get demerits for, and two demerits equal a detention.
This is this debate is very similar to no-excuses schools, charter schools in the U.S., where there's this idea that, like, you're policing Black and Latino kids' movements and activities and fidgeting in a way you never would for white kids. And I think this issue is genuinely controversial, not just, like, at a zoomed-out level, but I think even a lot of, like, families from lower-income backgrounds are like, it's different. Our kids are from a different background. They need more discipline. But at the same time, you can also see how it's creepy to punish kids basically from one social standing when other kids in like wealthy schools would never be punished for that same stuff.
Yeah. And I think the argument sort of in favor of this is like, look, these kids, they oftentimes don't have a lot of structure at home, maybe a single family home, a lot of poverty. And so this is the place where they're getting structure. So a writer for Time Magazine went to the school in 2018. He described it this way. Actually, Jesse, you want to read this? I'm talking a lot.
The school day is run with military precision. Everything from lessons to lunch is timed to the second with the aid of large digital clocks placed in each room. Teachers often give their classes a time frame in which to accomplish a task. 10 seconds to take out your books and open them to page 32 before counting down backwards. The transition between classes is also timed and completely silent. A black line runs down the center of the corridor carpets, and children are expected to silently proceed either side to their next classes. Eagle-eyed teachers stand ready to reprimand those who walk too slowly. Every detail is designed to maximize the amount of learning time. In the student bathrooms, there are no mirrors lest they distract the students. Again, this is very similar to some charter schools in the States, I think including some in New York.
How do you think you would have done at a school like this?
Awful. fidgety. I mean,
you need mirrors. You spend a lot of time preening.
Oh, just the primping before the school day alone. I couldn't have done without that.
They also have students actually serve. They have like families are welcome to come eat at the school and they have students serve them. And some of this actually does seem borderline cruel. Like in 2016, there was this big controversy after the Daily Mail reported that they have a policy that if a student's parents failed to pay for lunch, they had them eat in a separate room away from their peers, which Birbal Singh argued was just an extension of the emphasis on personal responsibility.
But that's not personal responsibility. You're going to punish the kids for the parents' lack of responsibility. No, that seems very messed up. So is it like mostly underprivileged kids who go to these schools?
Yeah, it's a lot of poor kids. Critics of the school, much like critics of American charter schools, claim that they self-select for high achievers. So that's why they have such good marks. Birbal Singh denies this. We do know that over a third of students qualify for free meals. A majority of them are from minority ethnic groups. And they also have a lot of kids with special needs. So it's exactly the population that is most underserved in most schools.
And is it like a popular school if you ask the random Brit who follows this sort of controversy?
Well, it depends on if the random Brit in the street, it depends on their political leanings, basically. So conservatives love her. Progressives generally don't. So besides the discipline stuff, the teaching methods are what many would consider outdated. So a lot of rote memorization, things like that. And Birbal Singh, she also thinks that you should teach students from immigrant or minority background's British culture and like instill in them a sense of national identity. She thinks this is really important. And so, as you can imagine, this is seen by some progressives as a form of white supremacy.
Okay. I'm guessing she's not like saying abandon all the, you know, culture you or your parents arrived here with, but isn't it normal to say, don't immigrants themselves often want very much to assimilate and be a part of British culture?
I mean, she's an immigrant.
Are people really respond?
She was born in New Zealand, raised in Toronto, you know, comes from immigrant
hard,
family too.
Hard scrabble. I guess I don't, people get very touchy about this stuff, and maybe there's something I'm missing, but part of the idea of a school is to sort of like forge citizens who share a common identity or values, but I could be missing something.
Did you have to do the Pledge of Allegiance when you were in school?
At one point we did. Yeah, it didn't. And I don't think that lasted very long until elementary school. Did you?
Yeah, we did. And then my sister and I made a point of refusing to do it.
Brave.
My parents actually might have called the ACLU when they tried to make us do it. They did call the ACLU. My mom definitely called the ACLU during high school, when my high school was doing Christian Heritage Week, and they would do prayers over the loudspeaker.
We're going to have,
as you can tell, we're a very popular family. Yeah,
Christian Heritage Week. It's just like the thinnest excuse to just do Christian stuff.
Right, right. Prayer in school was a big, big culture war issue at that point. Huge.
In the 90s, yeah.
Yeah, and it was especially like with football games. Could you pray before football games? Which now is back in the news thanks to a local Bremerton football coach.
I take it that they also had a Muslim Heritage Week where five times a day on the mic they do the call to prayer.
Yes. How did you know, Jesse? So yeah, progressives tend to not like her. One of the things that she does that she has said that makes progressives uncomfortable is that she said that teachers are afraid of disciplining black kids because they don't want to be called racist. So that obviously doesn't make her popular in some circles. And I will say, like, at times she does have a tendency to take the anti-woke thing a little too far.
What do you mean?
Okay, so let's go back to that speech she made at the NatCon conference earlier this year. Here's another clip from that.
There are kids right now in some schools with tails and ears pinned to their heads and bottoms. This isn't fancy dress. They identify as cats, you see. Kids aren't allowed to wear trainers to school, but they are allowed to wear ears and tails because that's their chosen identity. That's how they feel they belong.
Whoa, we export all of our dumbest stuff over there. Okay, so trainers, first of all, are sneakers, also known as lifts or chips. But the tail...
It's a very bad joke.
I know, but I love it. I just like the idea that everyone is lips. It's just funny to me. And that's all that matters. We're not recording this for anybody. It's just
keep
for
going.
Us. So this is just the idea that kids identify as cats, which is a common trope that I've never seen any hard evidence for. I'm sure kids wear this goofy shit.
Right.
Are they actually identifying as cats? Yeah, this seems a little out there.
Yeah, I mean, it is 100% true that kids wear like pointy ear headbands and tails around. I've seen that. I've seen this on the streets of Seattle. It's a look, as they say. And I would guess that some of these kids, like some of them probably do like, you know, take it too seriously. Maybe they identify as cats, just like goths or preps or emos or whatever. It's a subculture. But the real question is like, how does the school respond to this? And so she seems to think that schools are like letting these kids like drink milk out of bowls or lie down during lessons or go around on all fours. And so she tweets about this a lot because to her, this proves that there's this permissive atmosphere in schools that has just gone way too far. So here's an example of something she tweeted. Jesse, please read this. I've included a link in our notes here.
So this is Catherine Burble saying, at Miss Snuffy. Miss Snuffy's a great username.
It sounds like a furry name.
Yeah. Or
it sounds like a cat's
name. Or like a director of snuff films. Alexandra, okay, this is a screenshot she's tweeting out. Alexandra at Sarnie23. My daughter left college last year. During her 2 years there, quite a few students known as furries dressed as animals and went around college on all fours. Kids had to humor them and they were disciplined if they took the Mickey. It's like taking the piss.
Mm-hmm. Making fun of them.
Like if they make fun of them. Yeah. Okay, there's a response from someone named Farius Fee who says, we have had a portion of inset training. I don't know what any of these words mean. We have had a portion of inset training dedicated to furries. My lodger's school has pupils who identify as furries and they have to be allowed to express themselves. This is like an episode of Yes, Yes, No.
Right. So INSET, that stands for In-Service Education and Training. So it's like a for like officials or whatever. So the person who tweeted that is a furry. That person is absolutely...
They're taking the piss.
They're taking the piss, yes. And so she posts this thinking, presumably thinking that this is real because she doesn't realize that she's like tweeting an actual yeah. fucking furry.
Which proves a furry point that these people are very credulous.
Right. So she...
Gullible.
Yeah. So she really thinks that this is happening. So that's what I mean by taking the anti-woke thing.
That's it. That's all the preview you get. If you want to hear the rest, go to blockedandreported.org and sign up. Thank you for listening.